SFJ 4x4 Studios presents.
In my oversized four-wheel drive Jeep.
A Jeep podcast starring industry experts.
Pure monosity. What? Say that again.
With mad scientist Scott Brown.
Use my drill press as a sort of lathe.
Our host, Neil Simpson.
If one light goes out, they all go out.
Filled with shenanigans.
We are really professional with Jeeps.
This is I Speak Jeep.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever, however you are joining us. This is the I Speak Jeep podcast presented by SFJ4x4.com. My name is Neil from Simpson Family Jeeps.
Are you sure?
Joined in Grandma's Couch Studio by these fine gentlemen here.
Who are these fine gentlemen?
I don't know.
It was silence. I'm Jeff Tremonti.
Are you sure?
God, you're the worst.
The funny part is he still hasn't said who he is.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Matt is a scientist.
Matt is a scientist, that's for sure.
Cleaning pedals today.
Cleaning pedal assemblies.
Yes.
So we're going to jump right to the comments because they got into it before we even went live on the camera. So we've got Amy saying, good morning, guys.
Good morning, honey.
Joe saying, good morning. Brad Davis saying, good morning, fellas. And Rob Morgan saying, morning, guys.
They are primed and
good,
ready.
Good morning to everybody. Well, you know, the sun's out, yep. And the weekend was good. There was, so I know factually, Joe was out at Anthracite, AOAA, with his club Wheeling Upright out of kind of that Pittsburgh Western
Pennsylvania
area. I'm
literally waiting to see him pop in the comments and tell us what he's bringing it to this week.
No. Joe, you know, what I always tell my customers, you know, kind of just tongue-in-cheek, but I hope that I don't see you again anytime soon, right?
Yeah.
We want to set you up for success. And arguably, we want for you then to stay away as
yeah,
as long as
possible. But then you
possible.
Teased him with train horns, so I'm expecting him to call in with train wanting train
honk
horns.
Honk at him with train horns on the way out. That's true.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, guys. So I know that. So we had those folks who were out at AOA and that club. The Good Evening Ranch hosted a big off road event where there was quite a few local folks from maybe Ashtabula County Off Road were represented there.
Saw a lot of coverage of that.
Yes, an associate of ours, Brian Malik, I believe, was running one of his rigs out that way. So, you know, good luck to them, or not good luck to them, but hopefully it was a good weekend for them. I know one of our friends, Tom Sable, was out there. He had a sleepy Jeep, and it fell over.
I think at this point in the game, he's just likes that.
I think he does. I think he does.
He's trying to straighten the cage now.
I remember in the past, I'd reach out and be like, oh, man, are you okay? And at this point, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. That was just another day for him, you know?
Yep.
So I know that was happening. And then obviously our friends to the south at a more of a national level, we had Jeep Beach happening.
Mm-hmm. Joe said nobody died.
That's okay.
That's a good start.
That's next time. Something to shoot for. Goals.
Oh, boy.
this could go downhill real fast. But, yeah, so it was a real busy weekend for our off-road community. To get out and start to use these vehicles that make us so happy. And obviously the weather's going to change, you know, across the board, and the top's going to come down, the doors are going to come off, and that just is so uniquely what makes our platform so desirable.
Yes, 100%.
So I know I had a very busy weekend. We oftentimes like to share some updates that are happening within our personal professional lives. If you are one of the lucky three people who are listening to us in your ear holes, understand that you could always join us live at 10:19, jump into these comments, share with us, tell us about your weekend, chat with other people in there. Obviously, if not, if this is one of your first times joining us, A, you know that. B, we appreciate you for joining us and downloading this and listening to on your commute, the flight, whatever it is. And joining one of the fastest growing podcasts, automotive podcasts in the industry. Over 35 countries, tens of thousands of downloads, hours and hours and hours and hours of people joining us and getting in on this conversation.
Those three guys are really busy.
Those three people are really busy hopping around the country listening to us.
Yeah. Daddy Jeep's in the comments with his busy weekend update saying, we cut a new green trail at Bantam yesterday. So that's pretty exciting.
It is.
And then
is.
Good morning, Roy, as well.
Good morning. And Bantam is coming up faster. So if you are on the East Coast, that has arguably been one of the go-to shows in Western Pennsylvania, and they do have on-site and off-site trails that a lot of local volunteers work very hard to support. And then
your year round on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then honestly, I was going to mention that JJ USA ran last week, and so we had friends of the business who were out in Moab and Arch Canyon and a couple other places out that way, I believe.
What a way to kick off the season.
Yes. Yeah, it was a big weekend, big weekend. It was very cool. But understand, so, I was sharing for those three listeners and our live audience, we're going to talk a little bit about some of our personal endeavors over the weekend. And then we're going to get into Jeffrey titled it Used, Not Abused, which is fun. It's basically going to be the concept of how do we go about buying and maybe a little bit of selling used parts.
Yes,
right?
The do's and the don'ts.
Yeah, and we're going to unpack a little bit of that for you, and arguably we all have a wealth of experience on both sides of the counter, both sides of the equation. So how was your weekend, guys? I know you did some maintenance. And
It was a busy weekend for me. I went to Erie on Saturday, went for an album release or single release party, album fundraiser for a friend of mine, and that was just a good time hearing some the stories behind the original music that he's putting out there. So that was really fun. And I took Xander. He had a great time. His girlfriend has a 11-year-old as well, so Xander and that 11-year-old got to hang out for the night.
Awesome.
And it was at the City Gallery in Erie, which is a nice art gallery. It's really fun, interesting place to check out. Pictures and stuff were all for sale. There was paintings all over, mosaics, all sorts of things. Something I think you and your wife would really enjoy going to.
What is the City Art Gallery?
It's called City Gallery, and it's part of PACA in downtown Erie off of State Street.
Huh.
First time I'd ever been in there. I've heard a lot about it. It was really a unique space.
That's cool.
Sounds like it.
So we did that. And then Sunday, we were starting to prep for our upcoming camping trip to Iowa. We're not taking the big camper this year, so we were doing some maintenance. Not taking the pirate ship.
Okay.
Nope.
Interesting.
So we're going to do things a little different this year. We're only going to be in Iowa for a couple days, and then I'm driving home separate, and she's following her dad down to Texas with the kids to visit her grandfather down in Texas for a few days. So she'll be gone for about a week and a half. I'll only be gone for a couple days. But we decided for that reason, we'll just take a big tent. And as part of that, we were doing some maintenance on the Jeep Saturday. I did oil change, tire rotation.
You're going to be overlanding. Overlanding.
Well, so instead of buying a deck system, as cool as those are, we decided to build our own little modification deck system so that we can have the tent and lawn chairs and stuff underneath of it and still have a platform so that if we need to stop for sleeping along the way, we can sleep right in the back of the truck without having to set up a tent.
Not surprised.
Her idea. I'm just running with it, as usual.
Okay. You just have to create it and make it into being.
Literally.
You have the Conestoga wagon cover on your Jeep.
Yeah. So we'll be like it's a tent almost set up in there. We're raising up the bed of the truck just to be above the wheel well, so you got a full flat surface.
Right. So you're building a platform.
Basically building a platform with some understorage.
Sure. And you can keep stuff under it.
Yep.
And then arguably within, pretty short presto change-o.
Yep.
You're able to just kind of hunker down in there.
Yep. And we'll have the big tent that we got as well so that we can sleep in the tent at the campsite. But just in case, because she's talking about wanting to leave Tuesday night after work and getting on the road, getting, halfway there and then parking for a few hours and then finishing off.
That's awesome. I love that. That's one of the things that kind of built the American spirit, is just kind of our ability to explore and adventure, get on the road and be like, well, I'm going to get in the general direction.
And
then when I get tired, I'll pull over and I'll sort it out from there.
Honestly, those are the best road trips.
They are.
And of course, because the weather was so nice yesterday, after the rain had stopped early afternoon, I was able to get my lawn mowed finally. I was the last one in the neighborhood because of my busy schedule. Finally got around to that. I had to tear apart my tractor to get a ratchet strap undone from the blades. That was fun.
it's about having kids.
Yeah. So we did that. But also I took the opportunity to start prepping my Jeep for the summer. I got the doors off, the top off, put the mirrors on to just give it its initial drive today to work. And that's what I did this morning. Drove in completely with the Jeep naked, ready to go.
Awesome. That's, again, that's what makes our vehicles so, you know, so impactful to us, is the versatility to meet our needs. If you want to be like Scott and have the top on, the doors up, and the air conditioning or heat running at all times.
That also happened this weekend.
You can do that. You can do that. If you want to be.
Gotta love living by the Great Lakes, so we can literally have one person with heat going and another person with the doors off, topless going. Yeah. Oh, it's too nice for that.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Gosh, is that funny. As far as the comments are concerned, Peggy asked about what's her Jeep. Peggy, as a public declaration, your Jeep is ready for pickup. So rejoice in that. And then Bill jumps in and says, and he helped too. This old man is more than a green trail will be fun. What does it say?
He's sore. He's sore, but he helped cut the trail.
Sore, but the green trail will be fun. Yeah. Oh, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. I've messed up the teleprompts too, so you're allowed to this time.
My bad. Whoopsie.
Some old man eyes.
Yeah.
Do I need to change the font on the screen? Maybe I should turn the TV screen.
That's 40-year-old
bigger.
Eyes.
I'm going to get LASIK. I can't wait to get
LASIK.
That's
where I'll be in November.
That's
anyway.
One of my goals.
I had LASIK done years ago.
I want 10 years. If I get it for 10 years,
I had it for 10 years. It was great. And then I started needing glasses again.
Yep.
It is what it is. I'm not doing it again, but I highly recommend it to anyone.
That's what I'm telling. I'm telling everybody. It's my little personal life goal at the moment is, and I understand that it has a finite versatility.
The older you get, the less time you get with it, because there's a muscle in your eye that starts to wear out. And ultimately, reading glasses becomes a thing for most people anyways.
Isn't that interesting? Okay. Well, look at this. You're learning about Jeeps and eyes today. And eyes.
So I had a busy weekend Saturday.
Because part of your weekend is actually inspiring the topic today. So don't expand too much. But
yeah. I played hooky from work on Saturday. Went to the Canfield swap meet down in Canfield, Ohio at the fairgrounds. It's a place I've been going with my dad and brothers forever. So it's kind of interesting. I've missed a couple of years because you just get busy and then you realize like, oh, that's this weekend. Yeah. So this year I tried to do better and kind of mark it on the calendar. So it was in my face every day on the refrigerator. And got the appropriate days off. So we went ahead because one of the biggest challenges with a lot of these bigger swap meets is the older generation keeps making them earlier and earlier and earlier and then griping about nobody showing up. So by Saturday, there was literally, if it would have rained at all down there, there probably would have been a lot of people pulling out, which is super frustrating for a working guy.
Sure.
Because it literally has yet another day of supposed to be people there and vending. But anyway... we'll expand on that more later in the program. And then when we got home, we were actually pretty much exhausted because we walked like 5.5 to 7 miles. There's a contention between us.
Contention between his wife. They're competitively trying to figure out their mileage.
No, we actually don't care. We were just walking. But we went with a friend, and his phone ironically kept track of steps, even though we're the younger guys and ours don't. And he said he walked 5.5 miles, but he sat for a good part of that time. So we're just
estimating
how much more we walked than he did. So we were able to see almost 99% of the fairgrounds. So that was good.
I really thought you had a smartphone, and I didn't think smartphones nowadays didn't track steps.
It probably is. I just don't know how to access
that
it.
That makes more sense. I was half expecting you to pull out a phone and be like, nope, I actually have the old flip phone still.
No, it's honestly not that important to me. I just was able to.
It's just fun. It's a fun metric.
But it poured on us on the way down, and ended up being beautiful the whole time we were down there. So that was really good. And then we have a tradition afterwards. We always go to the hot dog shop. We normally make a trek, but it's about 30 minutes the opposite way or the wrong way, and we go to the OG one with a big hot dog.
Is it literally called the OG?
Well, no, but it's one of the first. I think it is the first. It's been there forever. You literally stand in line, and it's a really cool counter setup with some booths added in. But they have a couple now, almost like a chain. So we went to the one that's really right there in Boardman, not too far from Canfield.
What's it called?
The Hot Dog Shop.
It's literally called the Hot Dog Shop. I was really having a hard time.
And I go there and get a cheeseburger, as you would expect.
Scott, you're the worst. You are probably the worst.
Wow. Go to the hot dog shop so you can get a burger.
That's what I do. So anyway, that's our tradition, so we do that. And they have the big plate of fries and get whatever you want that's going to clog your arteries on them, so that's good. And
we're talking about the sub shop, like on your way into Columbiana? Is that the hot dog sub shop on the...
No.
Okay.
But that's also a good place that you should go to.
Yeah. That's after Canfield, I would oftentimes go down there to that because obviously we had a whole route or
it makes perfect
number
sense.
Of businesses that we would, you know, go and
we'll have to look up the mileage, see if it's actually closer than the one in as it's out on Route 45. So it makes sense that I grew up on the west part of our county. So when we would go home, we would always go that way, and we just literally drove by it. So now that living on the east side of the county, you have to go that way to come back around.
What odd old man problems he has,
right?
To contextualize
by a boomer.
Dude, first of all, God love Fred. He was beyond a boomer, just so we're all
I just want to point out that last Wednesday, Xander had a eye appointment for the prosthetics. We drove to Cleveland for the eye appointment, mm-hmm. and then turned around and drove to Erie for other stuff on.
I just feel bad the whole
time. Right, he in the back of his
mind. We're like, why do people complain about road trips? This is great.
He experiences an existential life crisis when he has to
I hear
do
my
that.
Dad yelling at me in my head.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Nice. Oh my goodness. Okay. And then yesterday, what was anything? Or?
So yesterday,
I saw a big update on the
wife
the social
had to work.
Pages.
So I went out and started hacking on my fender, started kind of reminding myself of past grievances that I did before I knew how to make metal do what I wanted it to do. And I was just packing the fenders full of, Bondo and filler.
Oh dear.
So I heated all that off, and like I had talked about last week, I'm getting the fender extensions from a different car because mine were welded together. So I sacrificed my fender extension, kind of get down to where that flange is supposed to bolt on, and was able to get one fender to that point and kind of saw some of their patching. That's what you would expect an old patch to look like. So I might revisit some of those areas. I got to get their filler off and see what that looks like, but it doesn't look the best from the backside. And I got to put a little tab for the fender brace because that is missing. It's ripped off at some point. So I have a bunch of work I need to do to that. Fender extensions, he had a delay. He was actually really busy, so they didn't get shipped out, but they're supposed to go out today. And the other exciting thing, for me at least, is I will have spark plug wires today.
Oh,
the custom ones. He was finally able to get those done and shipped out. So that means I am very close to getting fuel system done and breaking in the cam and getting the motor running. So that's exciting.
Very cool.
I'll be able to yard drive the car after that pretty much, and maybe one trip down the yard or road and back because it is registered and insured. Why not?
Yeah.
Put my
absolutely.
Goggles on. That'll be the
put my goggles on.
Well, there's no winch. There's no glass in the car at all.
Your point?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just going
it's
down the road
to me. Anyway.
You're going to be driving that thing so slow for that first drive.
Oh, you better believe it.
There's no point. You probably walk faster than you're going to drive that initial drive. I know better.
When I first got the car, we made that track up and back. So right. I want to at least make the same ride.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, I knew that was
four
your first
and a half
main
years
voyage.
Later.
Your main voyage. And when he was talking about putting his goggles on, he just kind of like made me think of like a 19-teens Henry Ford. And like,
oh, yeah.
Where goggles and the helmet and the little roadster.
Thanks to Davey, I have a pair. I just can't see when they're on. So
we need to set up. We need to set up a whole video thing just so that we can capture this moment.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because he's going to just do it like randomly on the spur of the moment.
I know, but if we were able to set it up and capture that moment, he would have that forever. His kids would have that memory.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That means I got to put the back seat back in. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah, you don't need to put a seat in it.
So, is that sufficient? Well, you had a big photo dump.
The final thing was my wife had to open, and she was having a rough day coming back. You know, she's all sunburnt and stuff from that because we tried to do good, but you know, we forgot to do her forehead and her face, so she's all beet red. And she had mentioned that it was just in passing. I got our text message back and forth that I really want Taco Bell. We never go to Taco Bell because barbecue sauce is sometimes spicy to me. So I was like thinking to myself, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the nice husband thing. So we needed some groceries. We drove in. I got the groceries, put them in the back, and we sat for like 15 to 20 minutes while she finished her shift. She came out. I had a shirt for her already to change into, and I didn't tell the kids or her anything where we were going. And we go out, start heading that way. And she's like, "We're going to Taco Bell, aren't we?" So I went. We got Taco Bell. Then
a big deal to them.
It is.
So hey, Taco Bell's not cheap anymore. It's a big deal.
and of course, for our listeners at home, understanding by extension that if barbecue sauce is spicy for Scott,
it burned.
Taco Bell is somehow apparently.
You use a Diablo sauce, right?
Oh, spicier yet.
Anyway,
what is this?
So then we
remember when we were going to talk about Jeeps. If we're talking about
we're going to talk about Taco Bell at this point.
So then we needed to go to Walmart. We did that as a family. And then because I'm my dad's son.
Just your old man type. I can't believe that you needed to go to Walmart after Taco Bell and not straight home.
That was the direction. How you turn in and out of places. See, there's a hole.
Literally, he's telling us literally about his day, how he mapped out his drive.
So,
dude, where are we going with this?
Well, I'm almost there. You guys just keep interrupting me. So instead of trying to come out to Walmart and turn, and then fight to get in the Aldi to get her car.
Fight. There's no fight.
I went through the mall, which meant I drove by Tractor Supply, which meant we could see the trees and the plants. And we're like, oh, wonder what they have. And she, of course, being oversupportive, was like, well, why don't we go look? So we accidentally turned in there and look in. And they had two willow trees left, and they were cheap. So next thing I know, I'm stuffing a willow tree in a lilac bush, laying down underneath the bed cover of the truck. And then I proceeded to drive 24 miles an hour all the way home. too much to the dismay of some guy from Pennsylvania in a red minivan. That happened to follow us the entire way. I took back roads. I had a whole plan.
You don't live that far. Why?
Well, I don't know. Because I didn't want to do 24 miles an hour and 50 mile an hour thing. Because
Why did you? It was underneath the cover of the bed. No,
it's a tall tree. There's a lot of it hanging out.
It's a tree. It's supposed to, like, it can sustain windstorms.
Because we bought one at a nursery, and that guy beat into my head that you can give them windburn, and they actually will kill the tree. So I wasn't going to lose a tree over driving home too
over
fast.
Over windburn. Oh, my goodness.
So I apologize to the Pennsylvania person.
But you
followed me the whole way home on back roads, so you could have took Route 20. Anyway.
Wow.
What? So then we planted trees and shrubs, and that was the end of the day. So it was a good weekend.
Excellent. Excellent. I will keep mine incredibly short. If anybody's still listening to us after Scott's tirade of directional foreplanning, where he doesn't have to turn against traffic at all. We worked on our house all weekend. We too planted trees and shrubs and orchard. And I am, what I am doing, and there might be some folks at home who can commiserate with this. One of the biggest challenges that I didn't realize was going to be a challenge is putting in a driveway. Mm-hmm. As a Jeep owner, we usually just, you know, I don't really
Jeep through.
We just Jeep through life, you know what I mean? And so when we had originally cut in the drive, I just, we never put down any pavers or leveled anything. We just drove a path to and from the house.
You literally made a driveway.
We literally by driving made a driveway on it. By driving on it. Now that I'm actually trying to,
that there's a base and a level of maintenance
and level and pack down stuff and get stuff to a more normalized.
Normal people do that.
You know, that you can get a car easily in and out. I am really struggling to like this seems like such an incredibly simple concept. And it's not. I just couldn't believe, I can't believe how like challenging it is to keep like putting dirt in the low spots. And I don't know where the dirt is going.
So drag the high spots out.
So I tried doing that.
But you've packed it down too hard?
But I've packed it down really hard.
This was a growing field, so there's topsoil and everything.
There's
else.
Topsoil and there's a whole bunch
that's
of
not good.
Jennifer's in the comments going, Scott is a gentle soul and a treasure. We must protect him at all costs. I love that comment.
It's true. It's true. It's what he brings to the table. I will forever tell the story. Many years ago, my wife and I had taken our first vacation. We'd gone many years of very, very poor startup of the business. It was very challenging. And we were in a position we could take a vacation for the first time after a long time.
And fly to the other side of
and
the country.
Fly to the other side of the country to visit some friends out there. And the plane is stuck on the tarmac. And at that point in time, it was just Greg and yourself and me at the business. And the plane is stuck on the tarmac. And I, you know, my wife and I are joking with each other based on the dynamic and personalities of our team. And that at that point in time, if we were there as a group, that Greg would get up and he would, Greg, our lead performance mechanic, if you're not familiar with us, he would get up and he would be grumbling under his breath, audible just enough.
Just all the expletives.
All the expletives and being like, well, anybody got a paper clip and I need a hair tie and I'm going to take some bubble gum and duct tape and I'll fix this plane and we'll get off the tarmac, you know, before you know it. And Scott would get up shortly after Greg and be like, folks, it's okay. Everything is going to be all right. The plane is going to tell us what it needs. I'm going to need your cooperation and I'm going to need a couple supplies. So we're going to pull together and figure out what those things are. And Greg would go stomping off the plane and Scott would go right after and they'd be gathering supplies and they'd fix the plane. We'd be off the tarmac in 10 minutes. Yeah. That would just be how it worked.
You tell that story, but I have not heard how you would fold into that story.
Oh, I'd sit back and enjoy the show. That's really...
No, you wouldn't. You'd be up in there talking to everybody. You'd be telling stories, making a scene somehow.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. I would be offering unhelpful commentary, ensuring that everybody's needs were met in the process.
Checking on progress at some point. No, you're yelling at the flight stewardess. Get these people some drinks out there. Hey, there's food on that cart. Get that cart moving
that's
up
exactly
here to get
right.
them.
It's like a circus ringmaster. That's exactly what it would be.
My guys got the plane. You
We've
guys worry
this.
About the people here. You grab this.
That is so true.
My dad, Fred, is basically Greg. Just learning how to operate around a Greg.
Wonderful. Well, kind of touching on Fred and our experiences on our come up, if you will, but also just valuable to the automotive industry and specifically the Jeep industry up until very recently, we have to or have had to repurpose a lot of things.
Yes.
And in the process of repurposing, there are advantages and disadvantages. And so that's where the title of Used Not Abused that Jeffrey put in there is so important. And the idea that buying and selling used parts is actually a big part
always has been. Yeah.
A big part of the auto community, but specifically the off-road and 4x4 market. The off-road and 4x4 market, you know, our ability to order things kind of at the touch of a button realistically only happened within the last 10 years as far as bolt-on, you know, 10 to 15. Other than that, there was, you know, realistically, our market was not super, super well supported. We had a couple big-name players, but
the DIY friendliness of it was not there.
Well, you had to be super DIY.
You had to be super DIY. You had to be in the junkyard.
Welding and...
Right. You had to do a lot of cutting, welding, grinding, repurposing from other vehicles.
I remember a forum, and there was a list of all the cars and trucks that you could get parts off to lift your Jeep Cherokee appropriate amount of inches that somebody had gone through and done all the R&D for you, that if you got springs out of this and leafs out of that and a shackle out of this and that out of this, you could lift your Jeep 3 to 3.5 inches with junkyard parts.
Yep. That was a big part of what we did.
Which is pretty much unheard of now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and for good reason. It was not the best by any stretch. You had very short life out of that stuff, or things weren't quite right.
Sourcing it was challenging.
Speaking of people that fabricate their own parts, Bill is in here going, Rob's new tow rig is now named Ricky Bobby. I want to know
There's a story there.
I want that story.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be a good story.
Yeah. There's a story there.
There's a story there.
But yeah, as far as being able to, what we'd like to call fabricable, a lift kit or bumpers or, you know, repurposing lights of some sort, that was a really big part of our industry as a whole.
100%.
And people who are familiar with this business, we started in the used parts game.
Yes.
That was really the objective, was to repurpose, you know, Jeeps and sell off their best parts possible.
When you start with little to nothing, it's very exciting to go out and get that value, what you intrinsically think of a value. So you go out and you find this part, and maybe it's in the wrong spot. So this car guy has this lift kit, and he's like, I have no interest in this lift kit, so now I'm going to sell it, just get rid of it out of my way. And you walk in and you realize what it is, and you get this huge value perceived.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes bites you. We've both been on that,
right?
Both sides of that,
right?
But it's just something exciting about getting something big for a small amount of money, and trying to figure that out, of how that works and that kind of stuff. And there's many challenges, which I'm sure we'll go over a little bit.
Well, and as people upgrade their Jeeps and modify their Jeeps, they are taking parts off.
Yes.
So what better way than to sell them off? Maybe it's as simple as take off wheels and, they're OE, but somebody else may have gotten into an accident and destroyed their wheels and 100%. Don't want to spend $300-$400 on aftermarket wheels.
Which kind of, on that note, me and my wife were, it was kind of a running joke of spotting stock JK and JL and JT taillights, bumpers, and sidesteps at the car swap meet.
I bet there was a lot.
There was a ton.
Yep.
And a lot of the JL ones were missing the hooks. So we're like, there's literally no reason to even buy that. And you know,
what was missing the hooks?
They took the bumper apart. So the tow hooks are missing.
They've taken the bumper apart.
The fog lights are missing. The harness is missing. So you're literally buying the plastic.
Just the casing.
Which is great if you got into
a little fender bender.
A tiny fender bender. But they're going to do you a whole lot.
It's great, except for the fact that now you have to disassemble yours to reassemble a new one. And there's a lot to assemble those bumpers. It's almost stupid how much there is involved
but
in that.
But, you know, it's fascinating to me because, granted, we're very much a niche business catering to a niche market. And our customer base is oftentimes already well ingrained in the authentic nature of the Jeep and off-road culture.
Yeah.
Whereas you might be a Jeep owner and you're just going to your local service garage, it still amazes me how much those local service garages charge you for a used plastic bumper, right? And they're going to take it apart because you got into a little fender bender, and now the insurance company is paying out $300-$400 for this plastic piece, and they bought it, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fascinating to me. I almost take it as a little bit of a like a travesty, like a little bit of a rub, you know, because, you know, we sell, God, I'll probably give you a plastic bumper if I, you know, we have so many of them.
Mine's
going
to become milk jugs in the sky somewhere.
Correct. You know, and elsewhere in the country right now, somebody is, whether it be an insurance policy or somebody who just uses their Jeep to go from point A to point B, got into, you know, hit a deer, hit a raccoon, hit a whatever happening.
Yeah.
And now they're paying $500-$600 for a plastic replacement.
Oh yeah.
And
that's really right there in a nutshell is the game of used parts.
Correct.
Because over here, that bumper has a $500 value. When I took it off my truck, it literally had zero value.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was literally straight up just recycle it, turn it back into something
else.
Well,
that's so often the case is those takeoff parts have zero value unless you come across that one buyer. Person out of 100 million people that is like, I need that part and I will pay for that part.
Just to kind of give you a little background, what a swap meet is acres of that. Everyone, the idea of how it started is you would take all the parts you no longer needed or tools or whatever, because you can literally sell anything just about at
it's
a swap
like
meet.
A flea market, but more automotive based.
And then the idea was you would take your vehicle, you would open your trunk, and you would have the things that you don't need. Well, look, hopefully the guy three stalls down needs those parts and vice versa. So the idea was
swapping parts.
That try to help each other build their projects.
Yep.
At this point, we're talking a huge acreage. People literally do it for a business. That's kind of what we did for a minute. But a weird thing that we learned early on is car swap meets and Jeep swap meets are like two opposing football teams.
At least it's the same sport.
It is the same sport.
I'm impressed that he made that reference.
It was a good reference.
But they kind of they see each other. They don't love each other. There's opposite. You know, there's some turf war going on. But so the ideal thing is we joked about it forever. If you saw a Jeep part at a car swap meet, it had no value.
Yep.
You almost would have to. You do have to listen to the old man that had the parts of how big of a piece of crap a Jeep was, how it just pushed snow good, but it leaked and it was a bad heater and all this other stuff. But you could buy that part and then you take it to the Jeep swap meet and suddenly it's worth gold.
Yes,
because you're taking that part where it had no value and moving it to a spot where it has value. And there's again, literally businesses. That's all they do.
Correct. And ultimately, that's one of the things that we did very successfully in the beginning. Was we were doing picking, and we were
finding the parts where they were.
Sometimes we were cleaning them up, then we were taking them and just transferring markets and plopping them down.
Finding
our buyer. And I always used to say, well, there's arguably a buyer for everything. It's 100%. Whether or not you want to take the time, energy, and effort to find that individual.
Yep.
And additionally, whether or not that individual was appropriate clientele for how you normally wanted to operate.
Now the challenges of us big meet like that is I literally walked, I'll just say 7 miles, and I bought $45 worth of things.
And you spent a lot of time. How much time were you doing?
It was basically from 8 till 2 o'clock.
So to me, though, a swap meet or a flea market, anything like that, is more about the experience going and enjoying the time, meeting new people.
100%.
Learning stories about their past and their vehicles.
I was just trying to.
And then if you pick up a couple things, then you really have
100%.
So that's experience. What I think is valuable about used parts or recycling as well is that oftentimes that price point comes with
a journey,
a journey, an experience. So there's good and bad about that. So if you just, you know, if sometimes you're over investing your time and your effort. So now you got to travel 2-3 hours away to pick up a set of tires and wheels. Is that actually that valuable to you?
And
sometimes
and really,
it is. Sometimes it's not.
If you get down the bare nuts and bolts of it, it probably isn't. So it's really all about the experience you do it with, where you stop along the way, who you talk to. Maybe there's a certain booth you stop at every single swap meet and you got this rapport with them, and that's only place you talk to them is there. The wealth of knowledge they have, being able to stuff a giant part that would cost you $1,000 to ship in your pickup truck. Another thing that happens a lot, especially at the swap meet I went to, is they are reproducers or retailers that are there, and they literally will bring your parts there. So if you're buying, say, the quarter panel of a 50s car that is, you know, 10 foot long, you can then just pick it up and you don't have to worry about the UPS man bashing it or that kind of stuff, or paying that big freight bill. Like last year, a friend that went with us, he literally bought a quarter for his car, and it was going to be $500 on top of the $1,000 quarter to have it shipped to him. Or he could just go there for the day, pick it up, take it home, and it was easy peasy done.
Sure. And that's something he would already enjoy doing. And so it just kind of is an appropriate extension of the experience. Now, as far as used parts are concerned, in general, we have the market is oftentimes dominated. You have OE takeoff parts, which is what you were talking about at this swap meet. You know, there was a lot of that.
Yes.
And then you have, you know, aftermarket parts. Now, typically the aftermarket parts show up because of part outs. You know, vehicle was damaged, vehicle was sold. They don't need these parts anymore.
Or they started to rust.
Or they started to rust and they
or
need
they
them.
Don't like that lift kit anymore, so they're going to take it off. And the biggest challenge you have at any used part thing, and it doesn't matter if it's a yard sale to a swap meet to anything like that, is you have to know what you're looking at easy. And I have been, was one of the things I'm blessed with is I can see something across the room and I know what it's from, because that person's not going to tell you what it's from. They half the time don't even know.
You don't even
care.
Have to see it. We've proven that with a couple times now where we've done the game where you're blindfolded and you've known the part every time. I don't think we've stumped you yet.
If you have that ability, you're going to make out good for used parts, because more than once I've been in a situation and I've seen something and I'm like, that's literally $20. That's $400 in the right place. And now I can go over and buy that. And maybe one part of it's damaged and I can easily replace or get rid of that. That is how you're going to be successful. Now, if you're in that selling ability, even if you're having a yard sale, put prices on your items, even if it's just a starting point. Because 90% of people, we used to talk about this all the time when we go use part selling.
They're not going to ask.
They're not going to ask. I literally would have bought some body hammers and dollies there. But the old men that had this booth were 5 miles, you know, figuratively. They were far away from this table. And they just wanted to drink coffee and shoot the bull. They saw me walk up there and pick up the hammer. They didn't bother to get up and walk over to me. And there was not a price on anything. Well, at that point, I'm going to sit the hammer down and I'm going to keep on walking, because I have 7 miles to cover and you never know what's at the next booth. So that possibility of sale had left at that point. Now, if he would have had, and I don't care if it said $200 at the hammer. Well, now I know I don't need to pick that hammer up.
Sure.
If he had $5 on the hammer, I'm going to find out who the heck you are and give you $5.
Sure.
That would have made all the difference in that transaction. And that what a big thing right now I'm very much passionate about is there's a lot of the older generation and all of it saying, well, the younger people aren't interested, or this is dying, or that's kind of dying. Well, yep, because you don't have prices on your stuff.
Well, not only that, but they are... American Hustle podcast, we talked about effort.
Yes.
They gave no effort to
zero
get up and
effort.
Greet you, to say hi, nothing.
Yes. And I don't want you like following me around, annoying me, but you got to at least
acknowledge.
Hey, you know, if I have to go find you to find out that's your booth, you failed. You failed the entrance exam.
Yeah.
And do better, please. And again, like I said, you have to think about, when is my market going to be available for this? So over in Hershey, PA, they have a big, huge swap meet. It starts on like a Monday, and by Friday, it's done. I've never gone because I work Monday through Friday. So that's just not a good investment of my time. I'd have to take a week off work to go 6 hours away to then try to hope to find a part.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that swap meet's not going to do well with younger people.
Sure.
So that's just something, again, you have to think about. And then when you are at those opportunities and you're wandering around, you're trying to find that part, you have to be willing to talk to strangers. look at things and take a chance sometimes. If it's cheap enough, sometimes you're buying it. You don't know if it's going to work or not. You're hoping it will.
Sure.
That happens. That's a risk of the game, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge inherently with used parts always is the idea of it's used and why is it being recycled at this point? Why is it being repurposed? And
you have to look at it from that point of view as well.
Kind
of
reverse
CSI, as I say, when I'm tearing a Jeep apart, I can tell a little bit of the history of the Jeep just by what the Jeep's telling me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do that with the parts.
And it's important, when you look at, say, like a suspension component or something that has movement or rotating assembly, are the bearings any good?
Yeah.
Are the bushing shot? Does the pivot, is it wallered out?
And can so you now get the parts to rebuild it?
Correct. And so that's oftentimes parts are sold and resold because of those reasons.
Yeah.
And one person goes, oh, it was just easier for me to look on the catalog, to pull the trigger, to replace this tire carrier.
Yep.
Okay.
I get it.
And you might be in a position to just make a bushing or buy the bushing that's needed to replace the pivot. Okay. That is a doable thing.
Yep.
Some things like, hub assemblies for TJs and up, XJs, TJs and up, which is a press fit captured assembly. Is that really worth buying used?
No.
Right? Because that part had a very short lifespan in general.
Yes.
Let alone it can be easily compromised. It could be easily damaged through use.
Likewise, brakes are very seldom like a stock brake component. You're not going to buy that used 90% of the time. If you're going to buy used brakes or an upgrade of some reason, but then the question begs, why is it not on the vehicle anymore?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And so, there is the used parts can come via swap meet. They can come via your club.
Yep.
Facebook Marketplace,
Craigslist, auctions, those kinds of things. And so there is this buyer beware as a generality.
Yes.
But there should also be a seller beware, right? And so the idea that oftentimes if you're in a club, you want to ensure that what you're selling is authentically what it's supposed to be. You and I have both in our younger years, our younger experiences, advertised and sold items that made people unhappy.
Yes.
And we both have these experiences where it's like, well, honestly, in your situation, there was an axle. You just simply didn't know any better.
Didn't know any better.
And
I got educated that day.
Oh, yeah, right. And I actually sold a set of doors that for, at that point in time, were...
Well, in our perspective, they were like brand new.
They were like brand new. They were
but
one
to
of the,
that person's perspective, they were not.
Correct.
Which are both valid.
And, and arguably, eBay as a whole, which used to sell a ton of parts, really struggled with the fact that the lens at which people look at life varies drastically based on their geography or their socioeconomic standing or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas I had this set of doors that were 15 years old.
Yep.
And to me, as a used door, they were gorgeous and sold for a okay price. It was not the not a bajillion dollars.
And at that moment in time, they were not the easiest thing to find in good shape either.
Correct.
In our area, which we're talking about, is rust. Door panels and that kind of stuff kind of was not as much of a concern for us as the shell rusted out and broken in half or dented. That was all good. And the paint was actually pretty decent.
It was.
Where you take that door to California, all the doors are not rusty.
Correct.
So now the door panel makes more of a difference, or maybe the mechanism is slightly sticky, or the latch is a little goofy, or something like that. So it really matters where you're at in the world for what is important to you or not.
Yes. And that, is an interesting extension of Takeoff, JKJL, JT tires, because, again, realistically, based on our market, there's not a lot of people who want to buy sport wheels and tires.
Yes.
No.
Just a kind of a highway terrain type rubber tire and then just a plain Jane, aluminum wheel.
Again, think about your market. So the person that's going to buy that sport tire is going to own a sport and have no interest in modifying it. but have handy enough that they can take a wheel and tire off themselves.
Right.
That's the guy that's going to buy those tires. And a big percentage of those people, like it or not, are going to take their vehicle into the dealership, and they're not ever going to take their wheel and tire off the vehicle. So that person is not
going to...
And then
the dealership's going to just sell you new tires.
Correct.
And if your wheel gets damaged, they're going to offer to sell you a new wheel.
Yep.
And you're going to pay the tax. So that person with that dealership experience is not going to buy that used wheel and tire. So now your market gets smaller and smaller and smaller, which every time that happens, the price drops. And yes, that wheel is, you know, $800 at the dealer, and that tire is $500 at the dealer. That doesn't mean that the guy in the garage is going to get $1,000 a piece out of each wheel and
not
tire.
Even close.
Not even close. Because in our market, it just doesn't have any intrinsic value or added value for, you know, for resale purposes.
And that kind of leads into the next part, which would be negotiating at those sales.
Yes.
Trying to work a deal that is favorable to you, but also fair to the seller.
And that's a good point, because it used to be, especially the old curmudgeons I would go to the swap meets with as a young person. Well, every time I go up to a booth, I'm going to try to get it for a cheaper price. That's just the price they're asking. I'm going to go in and for an ask, like you guys talk about on the other podcast. It used to be accepted, like you'd almost put a price a little higher and then like, well, I'll take $5 off and we'll meet in the middle somewhere. There has been, because of scarcity or people not reproducing parts, specifically I deal with this all the time with my 36 Ford, the price that's on there is the price, and if you push, they will literally not sell it to you.
And
I'm not going to lie, I started that. I'm going to say I started that, and I get it. So.
And while I understand that, I also understand that it's appropriate to still ask, hey, you know what? I see you've got that for $100. Would you take 90 for it?
Yeah.
If they say yes, you've both made a deal. If they say no, don't be a jerk about it.
And that's honestly a nice ask. In the swap meet world, you go for half.
See,
right.
Here's where that's
right.
This
and that's the
issue.
Other thing is you got to be appropriate in your ask.
And that's the issue, is that balance, right? Because what you're sharing is, you know, $5-$10 off. I call that the coupon.
Yeah.
Right. And we internally utilize that as the person, the buyer just wants their coupon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we go back to the 90s and your cereal box was, you got a 25-cent coupon. That didn't make or break the manufacturer. That just incentivized you to purchase that box of cereal.
Yep.
You clipped your coupon, you went in, and as you were checking out, hey, if I added up these 10 coupons, I saved $3, $4 on my grocery bill. Woo, I'm winning. Okay.
Yeah.
That has largely left American society as something that that we do anymore, but we still desire our little coupon, little incentive, that little break, the little bit of, hey, I got something. Now, the issue is, at the swap meet, value is in the eye of the beholder.
Yes,
and so,
it's all about body language and attitude.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things, right?
Yeah, you can learn to read and negotiate based on, like you said, body language, posture, the tone of the conversation, things like that.
Because I've been on both sides. If I had somebody come up and they're real polite, they're real nice, and hey, you know, I see you got $100 on that, we would take 50, and they're real polite about it, I'll think about it. If that guy comes up and he's real arrogant and he acts like my part's junk and he's asking me if he'll take $50 or less, because I've had that happen, no way, man.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with you.
That's right. You're going to tell him pound salt, you know? And the thing is that, yes, it should be worth $100. Now, that person who is selling X part for $100, do they want to take it home with them?
Yeah.
Do they want to put it back on the shelf? There was this mentality that, hey, this is all the cast-off stuff that I don't want anymore. And so some money is better than no money.
Right.
Right?
And you literally have people, specifically with swap meets or events, that use that as their market thing. They will literally show up Sunday morning, the day it closes, and go around and lowball everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
And the lowball offer as a whole, I think, is interesting, because I don't know that when I talk to too many people that anybody appreciates the lowball. Yet it was a absolutely common practice of just like almost like what I would call a throat punch practice.
100%.
And I'm going to say almost worse than the lowball to me is when somebody just says, can you make me a deal on this? No, tell me what you're willing to buy it for, and then I'll think about it.
Or I've had people, you know, literally you'll have something for like a dollar, and I'll give you 25 cents. I might as well throw it away.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
It's a principled issue at that point.
The low ball's annoying, but just the, can I get a deal on it? No, that's the price.
Well,
but if you ask, you're reasonable, hey, what if I take, would you take 20 bucks off of it? Would you take 50 right. bucks off of it?
Yeah.
If you're polite about it, like you said,
yep.
and you're approaching that in good faith,
yes,
there's more chance that you're going to get some kind of deal. May not be the deal that
or,
you are hoping
or you
for.
Or you go up to that person and you build a rapport with them. You talk about the project, your project. You kind of, you know, let them know that you're not a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Then you're more willing to then, okay, you know what, for you, I'll do a little bit less.
Yeah.
Yeah. But. So my dad always struggles. So first of all, his father didn't do a lot of business or finance in front of him. It was an old, that was
yeah
just a generational thing where you didn't really, certainly amongst the middle to working class.
Well, and some of it's not always nice. So I can understand why they did that. You know, bad words come out. People get a little bit angry or heated and that kind of stuff. So they're like, oh, I don't want my young person or my wife to see that. Well, but then they don't learn.
Well, and that was exactly it, is that my grandfather was known for going in and just kicking
going
for the jugular,
yeah.
right? And so my father never really liked negotiating. He wanted to go in and he wanted you to ask a fair price and he wanted to give you a fair value, right? Yep. Or, you know, vice versa. And so the issue is somewhere along the line, between my grandfather and the people he was buying vehicles from, somehow that was like, well, it's just business, right? And after I go for the jugular and we do our dance, then we can come back to center, right? And somehow that should be good. Whereas my father wanted to be like, well, let's just have some mutual courtesy here and do a transaction. So you have the two different kind of aspects that existed in the process of kind of negotiating. So let's, you know, kind of move away from the swap meets and the interpersonal, you know, buying and selling, and you get to the age of online buying and selling. And so
the Wild West,
as Joe is sharing in the comments, you know, marketplace, you get all the lowball offers.
Yes.
And what is fascinating.
My favorite about the lowball offers on marketplace is not just that you get the lowball, but you get the attitude about it.
Yes.
Oh, the attitude on that is insane, because it's like, you've got something listed for $500. Will you take 100 for it? No, I won't. Well, you're not going to sell it for any more than that. Okay, cool. I'm not selling it to you, though.
Why are you messaging me? Like, what value does this add to your conversation? Do you want to buy the part
or
not?
And that used to be the biggest challenge you had on Marketplace. But now at this point in the online Wild West, we now have people that are literally going out and taking pictures of other sale ads and listing them for sale and then taking people's money. And it is amazing how gullible some people are, because they want that bargain. And they see this really desirable part, like, say, we'll just make something up, say an ARB bumper for $100. Your radar should be going off.
The red flag should be happening.
All the red flags are happening. And for the most part, all you have to do is look at the person's name, look at when they joined, look at the way they wrote the ad. If it looks like
broken English
is not their first language, you're probably going to get scammed.
Even that, you've got to be more careful of, because AI now, with the way AI writes,
well, definitely that
it's becoming harder to tell that it's a scam just by the text.
And then I don't specifically know to do it, because I'm, you know, an 80-year-old man, but you can do a reverse image search and see if that image has been used other places on the web. There is all these tools to your disposal to try to do that. And again, get a rapport with the person, message them, talk about stuff, see if they're a real person, if they can back
it up. Well, and I think part of the issue is too, and I think it's valuable for us not to say just even if the person is foreign or not from our local geographic area, but even there are individuals who will list a part for sale online and the domestic, you know what I mean? Somebody that you may know, and this is where I was kind of talking about the club and the responsibility of the seller, and where we learned these lessons valuably, was that there are people who are they have good intentions, but they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how they're navigating the situation.
Yep.
And then sometimes they're like, hey, you know, I really want this part. I'll give you $50 to hold it. I can pick it up on Saturday. Okay, cool. And then all of a sudden Saturday comes around and that person is no longer able to be reached. You don't know. You don't have your $50 or God forbid $500 or whatever it is.
100%. If you say you're going to buy something, buy it.
Or if you're going to sell something, sell it, right? Yeah. And that is equally as responsible. Now, life happens, and so people get, upside down, or sometimes something comes up and they don't know how to navigate it.
At some point, ends up meaning to do something, and life gets in the way, and they can't. At that point, you have to own up. You have to, own your stuff, as Neil likes to say, sort of. And you have to tell that person, "I am sorry. I am." At this point, not doing you a service, and I cannot buy this anymore, and deal with repercussions. Therefore, because that is where you're at,
right? Sometimes we have to put our big adult undies on and do the deed.
I have literally, I hold that so important to me, mainly because the way my dad raised me. I have literally, if I say I'm going to buy something, and I figured out I actually don't need that. Oh, I have bought it anyway.
Yes.
Because I said I was going to buy it.
That integrity piece. And I'm like, well, I'm going to buy this. That sucks. Yeah. You know? And I'm like, I don't really need it now. It was something I literally just did that with.
Yeah.
Absolutely
it
just
sucks
did it.
So hard.
The other piece that I'll say about the online is the art of negotiation is intended to be done A, with rapport, or B, in person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I say in rapport, that means that after I have formed with you, after we have shared, after I have vetted that the part is exactly as described and as I need it to be, or whatever it is, then I can make an offer that is fair or appropriate. Mm-hmm. Or, again, negotiate in person after I have also vetted the product. It is not as Facebook Marketplace. The first thing you do is go in and go, hey, will you take $100 for this $500 part? I will always tell you no.
Yeah.
Most of my used stuff, I am open to a little bit of a coupon.
Yeah.
But I always respond back, make me an offer in person.
Yep.
Because I'm not going to do that dance. Now, as a buyer.
Shows you're invested a little bit at that point because you've made the travel to the part to look at it.
See, and that's exactly. And what I've heard, I know factually, buyers go, well, I'm not looking to waste your time because I'm only willing to spend $150. Well, that's cool. Wasting my time. By messaging me.
Yes.
See, it goes both ways in that conversation because.
Perfect examples when I bought my 36. I didn't have the money he was asking for it. And I was just honest and forthright. And I said in a message, I am very interested in your car. I would love to come look at it, but I'm not going to waste your time because this is my budget and this is all I have. And he told me, now that's, come on out and look at the car and we'll talk in person. That's fine. You gave me the green light to come, and then we're talking on the other side of Cleveland. It was a good little drive to do that, and I went and I looked at the car, I vetted the car, and then we got down to actually talking money. And I was like, I'm still only in it at this
money, X, Y, and Z dollars.
But I am willing to invest every dime I have in this. Are you willing to sell it to me? And again, because I wasn't a jerk, because I was forthright with what I was saying. I was polite when I showed up. I was, respectful when I was there. He sold it to me at what I had.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to.
And I believe that those transactions happen more often than the low balls.
100%.
Right? And the thing is, I think
just like anything, you can't let the one negative experience make your whole life about that, because there's 80 good experiences or okay experiences. They don't even have to be good. They can just be okay.
Sure.
Adequate. And people will talk about that one jerk that came up and wanted to give you no money for it and wasted your time.
Right.
Well, and I've been around a lot of people when I've done some of these negotiations, and they are always, how did you get that deal? How do you always get a deal? Why is it? And it's A, being polite and courteous, and B, knowing where that ask should be.
Yes.
There should always be an ask.
Yeah.
If you don't ask, you don't get. I'm very, very firm on that belief. But knowing where that is, knowing
when you overstep.
When you're overstepping.
Yeah.
Not to lowball somebody, because the deal needs to be fair to both parties.
Yes. Yes. And I think that that's was the issue, that some of those people who have gone in at the low ball, they have gotten that.
Everybody's probably lowballed them.
Well, they've been lowballed, but they've gotten a deal at one point or the other. Where Scott was talking about, hey, they got the big product. They got the $400 for $20.
Yeah,
and it's the thing great is, when that happens.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen that often, no, right? And no. That's the challenge, is they got that once or twice, and now they're going to go after it, time and time again.
Joe wants to play Monty Hall next visit.
I'll play all day long. It doesn't mean you're gonna get
Joe. I'm very good at this. We'll have fun.
We've gotten to where we're at because we know a couple things, you know. Next time Joe's bill's going up $100.
So, also because we've been there, done that, we don't ask an astronomical price either. We are trying to be fair. I see people all the time. They want $1,000 profit. Very rarely, that's going to be a once in a lifetime sale that you tell your grandchildren about.
Yes.
That's not every day.
Right.
So no. You have to say, okay, this is the means, and I'm doing.
Joe Lowry backed out. He's like, I tried.
You have to have a fair expectation of both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to, as a seller, you have to recognize if you're overstepping as well.
Yes.
If you realize that you've had that post for 10 weeks straight,
yes,
and everybody's hit you with a similar lowball offer, you're just overpriced for the market.
You're not in the right market.
That was me selling my truck. Let's just be honest. Yeah. I mean, people see me running around my truck because, first of all, I always get compliments on it, which, you know, is very self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
And
you love the truck.
I love the truck, but I came in at what I thought the truck should be valued based on Freightliner and a couple other manufacturers, right? Ford's F-650 and 750 line.
Yep.
And I went in and I asked a price point. And there was a number of people who were
a price point that realistically just 2 years ago would have been a very fair price.
Very fair price. And people who were just on the outside of my market into my big truck, medium truck market were like, hey, that seems like that's a lot of truck for not a lot of money. Like that seems decent, right? And then it sat on the market for a little while and I got some mid-range offers. But it occurred to me, I learned a valuable lesson in that period of time that based on the fact that it is an international, which is not a bad truck, it's just more of a work truck. It doesn't have the luxuries that these other trucks have.
Yep.
Even though my truck has the leather seats and it has the cruise and the air and blah, 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 it doesn't have these other luxuries, which then add to the extrinsic value of the vehicle. I then started to reduce my price. I got to a point and I had a couple of these offers where these guys, you know, came in and they offered me a price point that at that point in time, I reached a line in the sand where it goes, that truck's worth blah to me.
Yes.
I understand that you think it's worth either less or it's worth this line, but it's worth it to me. Like, I can't go out and replace it for that price point.
Right.
So then I'm just going to hold on to it.
And that's another challenge of markets, increase, decrease, change all the time. And that literally happened to you when you started selling the truck. I will say the market was one way.
Yes.
And over the time the truck was for sale, the market had completely changed.
And arguably, I was just on the tail end of that market.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I was just on the tail end of that market. If I would have listed it probably
dollar short.
You are right. If I listed it 3 months earlier, I probably would have sold it for, you know, more 100%. Money. But the market changed. And it's valuable for us to be aware of that.
You never know when that's going to happen either.
No, you don't. And I think it's interesting because we meet a lot of, typically they are older sellers. And they remember what the market used to be.
Yes.
Right? And they're stuck on that. Well, you can't get these parts. No, I mean, here's the internet. I can get 7 of them. Like, yeah. I'd love to buy it from you, but I can't buy it for 10 times its value.
Yes.
You
and know? Then flip side, we've seen it the other way, where they remember how it used to be when those parts were everywhere. And now they're not asking enough. And I remember, you know, American Pickers, they were a classic for going in and, oh, no, that's, you're selling it to me too cheap. Yeah, it's actually worth this. And we've done that.
We've done that, yeah.
Because, again, they don't know. And if you want to build a rapport with somebody, do that.
Offer more money than they're asking.
They will sit down and go, huh.
Yeah, I actually got my, I got myself in a integrity-based hot water years ago. I bought a part that was way undervalued. Mm-hmm. And the individual thought they were selling it to me for almost like a club transactional piece. Yeah. Now, would it have been nice to have then, you know, used it and built the Jeep like I had intended? Yeah, that would have been fine.
Yep.
But in that moment, I then went on to sell it elsewise, you know, or parts of it. And they were like, well, I can't believe you parted that thing apart. You know, you were supposed to be building it. If I would have known you would part it, yeah, I wouldn't have sold it to you. Blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, huh? Like, yeah, that's crazy. Now, I am a firm believer at this point in time that if I sell you something, I don't care what price it is, that's yours. I don't have any strings attached to it any further.
Yeah.
If you sell it for 10 times the money, good, I don't care. Good for you.
Yeah.
Right. But that's a weird piece with our market still, where people are going, hey, I gave you a deal based on how you thought
our interaction.
Yes. So that's valuable to navigate that and have that social piece.
I think it happened because it happened to me as well. There's an older person trying to help a younger person in that perspective. And sometimes how you have to look at that is you help them by allowing them to have some meat on the bone to then have some revenue to then do what they need to do in their life.
Yep.
Sure.
You can't put expectations of what they're going to do with it afterwards.
Yes. It's there's a lot to this subject. hopefully it was something awake, beneficial, and that, yeah, you're all three of you are still awake in the process. If you have any commentary on this, we would love to hear from you. As follow up, you can reach us on our text only number 440-855-2100. You can always email Jeffrey, JEFFC, at sfj4x4.com on a production note, right? For production purposes. If you're interested in used parts, now we as a business really don't sell used parts anymore. That was a big transition we did some years ago. We have some, but I like to call it my living library. Mm-hmm. I like for the guys to be able to go out there and kick our inventory and compare and contrast and
saves the bacon sometimes.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And so we don't do that as much as in business, but I hope that if you are in that position, either buying or selling, that something that you glean from us today benefits you.
Now, I know that there is a person that has chimed in a few times that is still selling used parts, and if you need anything for a Jeep, you should probably.
That's a good point.
You know what? For not being not sponsored, our friend Fred at Anything for a Jeep, specializing in 1976 to 86 CJ7 parts, is a great resource.
How's that for a hashtag not sponsored?
Yeah. And obviously, we've been to his space several times. Scott recently did a video with him. If you haven't seen that, check that out on the YouTubes. Also, if you haven't seen, we did a Fit in 40s YouTube video last Friday, which is performing very well on the internet. So if you're so inclined, jump on, take a look at that video. If you like it, make sure you share it and hit the notification bell. Really looking to build our subscription base. Like I said, we're actually performing exceedingly well over there, but we need, you know, our listeners and our viewers and our live audience
to keep it up.
We want to keep it up and keep producing for our Jeep and off-road and automotive family as a whole. We have a lot to cover. You'll see that in the live that Jeffrey typically does on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
You'll see what's going on in our home base and what's going on
even
in the
just
shop.
Since last week, we have rotated out a lot of Jeeps, so you'll be have something to look forward to.
No doubt. So we're going to get on that, and we'll join you again next week. We're going to be talking about spring, summer maintenance.
That's right.
We meant to tease that at the beginning. So those of you who are still awake at the very end, understand we'll be doing some maintenance routine talk next week. Until then, Jeep family, Jeep on.
Jeep on.
Jeep on.